Everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. Back again, time certainly does seem to fly. As usual, I am starting the program with the best part of Sheldon Neidl's message for this week. I find, as usual, that it's very hard to take out sections of it because the whole content is normally extremely interesting. They're certainly very well thought out messages, and they continue to enlighten us, which is, of course, their main purpose, in addition to keeping us up to date on the movement towards the time of first contact. This week, Sheldon's people mention about the world continuing to grow in consciousness, also saying that our planetary populace became less subject to manipulation by the Dark Cabal, mentioning that there is a mounting discontent with the miserable conditions that most of us have to endure, and that another factor is the rising power of their allies. They say this motley mix has served up a setting for a great change in the very near future. We see this grand transformation as now being ready to manifest in your reality. This we base on three main factors. First is the dangerous monetary situation on your world. The reign of the current US dollar is nearly over, which means a new monetary system is critically needed. Second, the present untenable petroleum-based economy of the planet is creating a new desire to find practical alternatives, and quickly. Third, the exponentially increasing world debt needs to be forgiven before a series of potentially explosive civil wars throughout your so-called third world becomes inevitable. This is the dire situation facing your many ruling cabals. Now, they say that the solutions to these dilemmas lie in heeding the requirements for change. This change can no longer be merely cosmetic. It needs to be a massive realigning of the financial, economic, and political elements that form your society. They go on to say that they have been able to use their good offices and technology to formulate a widely approved series of solutions. One of the more important addresses the monetary quandary. Ultimately, this involves a new global banking agreement, which in turn requires a new primary currency or, alternatively, a balanced spread of currencies. In any event, this new monetary giant needs to become the foundation of a system based upon true value. Your present fiat system has run its course and has fully displayed its countless inherent weaknesses. They go on to say that the prerequisite of a new true value monetary and banking system depends upon finding a new energy source to drive the global economic engine. This means that your fossil fuel-based economy is viewed as a dinosaur gasping its last by these practical ones. As the powerful US regime, still controlled by this dark cabal, begins to implode upon itself, the prospect for a coherent plan of campaign comes into focus. Bear in mind that our role in these matters is to work in tandem with our Earth allies to make this quiet revolution a reality. The dark cabal still maintains the primary power positions in the present system and is holding on for dear life. Their current stranglehold cannot last much longer. Like the mounting chaos in your various global systems, their internal chaos also grows and is soon to affect their complete collapse. This inevitability inspires and motivates our earthly coalitions. They go on to say that the political system you have long known is everywhere becoming more and more insufferable, and so regime changes are more likely to occur. Our intent is to help you create the requisite conditions that can then lead rapidly toward our formal acceptance and the moment for first contact. We feel this moment is getting very near. In every country, children who possess a higher level of consciousness are being born. Their addition daily raises the consciousness quotient of your reality. This further weakens the ability of this last cabal to compensate for the innate liabilities of their goals. All this means that you are advancing at an accelerated pace towards your victory. They go on to talk about some of the agreements which they have, saying that these ensure you will have an abundant and a safer world and can now start to emerge from behind the curtains where they have been kept. As you know, as soon as the US regime falls, a window of opportunity is thus created, and the demise of the current monetary and economic systems can be swiftly announced. A moment of transition will open up, which can move your world beyond the current brinkmanship into a space where she can prepare herself for something new. This something new is an innovative, precious, metal-backed currency system, an end to fractional banking, and a global debt forgiveness holiday. This is to be followed by a great sharing of abundance and the restoration of common law throughout the globe. These events contain the final steps leading to first contact. They include the implementation of new ecological pacts that end the tyranny of fossil fuel dependence and begin an age of alternatives. This contains the formal introduction of free energy devices and their derived transportation systems. Our arrival can spur this move to energy alternatives, but more importantly, will begin the necessary union between the inner earth people and the surface dwellers. This union can initiate you to much needed technology and serve as the start of a new galactic society for the peoples of Mother Earth. At this time, the facts about Earth's true history can be made known together with an amazing education system, enabling the assimilation of huge amounts of new information. Most importantly, these new abilities can enjoy a joyous return to full consciousness. I might comment there that for anyone who might be hearing for the first time about the inner Earth people, that these are the fabled Lemurians who link with the Atlanteans some 10, 12,000 years ago or more. And when the collapse of the Lemurian lands took place, they were forewarned and they went into the inner earth where they have been ever since. And these people are somewhat far more advanced than ourselves, and indeed they are responsible for some of the flying saucer sightings that we have seen. They talk about an amazing education system, enabling the assimilation of huge amounts of new information. And I think it was through one of Sheldon's messages quite some time ago that they intimated that this was possible by actually placing information straight into the brain. So it is not a matter of education in our recognized sense as we are used to now, but a new system where, to use perhaps a modern phrase, the information is downloaded straight into you. Anyway, I will proceed with the last extract from Sheldon's message. And they say that our purpose has been throughout to move you towards your divine destiny. This is why in our messages to you, we constantly harp on about the need to consider the big picture. Be positive and learn to move beyond your understandable frustrations. We know such advice can be challenging for those living in the anguished throes of a world wresting itself from the clutches of the dark. Nevertheless, you need to know that these necessary transformations you are going through are to result in your destined triumph. Well, that completes the extracts from Sheldon's message. There is no further message from Matthew. They come out a little bit less frequently. I'll comment firstly on my own messages that have come through over the last week. And yesterday there was one from Atmos, who is a member of the Galactic Federation. And in the course of the message, there was quite an emphasis on our doing something to help Mother Earth. And he was talking about the importance of us doing our bit, because bear in mind that they are going to help, which he confirmed, and they do, of course, have the technology and resources to do the work in short time. In response to that, I've had, strangely enough, quite a few emails asking me what can we do, and I've replied that the best thing we can do is to let Mother Earth know that we are aware of her needs, perhaps to pray to her, think of her in meditation. But if you want to be active in any way, you could write letters to your congressmen, bearing in mind that there is a lot to do currently to reduce the pollution which is still taking place. You could join groups, perhaps where people take a more positive or direct action. So there are things open to people if they want to get involved. Now, at this stage, I'm going to move on to the general news. There's a few bits come through this week, but isn't there every week? I don't really go looking for the information, but there is a lot that seems to circulate my way through the email system. Now, one thing I found was that, and I'm struggling here to find a bit of paper that I want to refer to. Oh, here we are, yes. An email that came through, or from George Vye, that's V-Y-E. There's an internet site given, and that's vhement.org, and that's spelled V-H-E-M-T. So I have to assume he's probably the originator of this information, but then it mentions a number of different sites, because what the email comprises of is about a half a dozen different extracts of news that's been going around in the last few weeks. So what I've done is picked out a few that I feel are particularly interesting. Now, the first one is from a site called Infowars.com, and the extract, which originated from Daniel L. Abrahamson, said that the impending opening of the Iranian International Oil Bourse, set to commence trading next week, which actually means this week, because that came out towards the end of last week, talking of the island nation of Kish, where it is set to commence trading next week, as I mentioned, and he says that it strongly increases the chance of an imminent nuclear American-Israeli strike on Iranian nuclear and financial facilities. And he calls that the electronic oil bubbles. Not much information in that, but he's just commenting on an event that seems to be inviting some sort of retaliation of that nature. There's another extract I wanted to refer to, which comes from pressbox.co.uk, and it talks of the much discussed information that talks about the intention behind the mad rush to bomb Iran, and the comments are made by terrorism expert Webster Tarpley. Can't actually see who he works for, but he said that there appears to be readiness to launch in the coming weeks or even days an attack on Iran because it offers or intends to offer oil in euros, and as a result of that it may trigger the rapid collapse of the US dollar. And that over the past 4 days the Western media has finally ended their blackout and acknowledged the possibility of an imminent dollar collapse as gold reaches nearly $700 an ounce. There is a further information from the globalandmail.com website, and this comes in what I would call short quips. One says, Iran wants oil market in euros, and that the article warns of a rapid decline in the dollar while feebly attempting to minimize the importance of the oil bars. The next quip says, nevertheless, the AP quotes a top Wall Street analyst who gives a far more realistic assessment. And he says, but if one day the world's largest oil producers allowed, or worse, demanded euros for their barrels, it would be the equivalent of a nuclear strike. And he refers to that as the financial equivalent. And that was said by A.G. Edwards, who is a commodities analyst. He goes on to say that if OPEC decided they didn't want dollars anymore, it would signal an end of American hegemony by signaling an end to the dollar as the sole reserve currency status, and concludes that some neocon warmongers are now openly calling for a strike on Iran because of the bores. Finally, there is another small item from the worldnetdaily.com, and it's headed, Iran signs its own death warrant. And Causey is the same GOP hack who helped sponsor the Swift boat ads and wrote unfit for command during the stage 2004 presidential election. In his article, he admits a major reason for the US invasion of Iraq was the oil for euros policy of Saddam Hussein, and warns of China's interest in the oil wars. He then goes further, predicting an imminent US attack. And he says, if Iran wants also to seriously threaten the dollar's position as a dominant foreign reserve currency, a war becomes almost certain. The Iranian oil wars may never be mentioned by US policymakers as an official reason the United States decides to go to war with Iran, but it may end up being the straw that broke the camel's back. And it concludes by saying that is according to Forbes. Right, that's it on those little quips. But I suppose they've clearly all been put together because they are showing that different opinions that have been put on the net seem to come to the same conclusion about the reason why there may be an attack on Iran. I have to think myself that that may be the key to the changes, because I feel quite certain that if a nuclear attack is attempted, that it will be stopped, and I think it will be through the intervention of our friends of the Galactic Federation. Anyway, we won't have apparently too much longer to find out what the result of that is. Right, an article from the New American Media, special investigative report from Jeffrey Klein and Paolo Pontinieri. This came out on the 11th of May, And it reads that San Francisco Italian journalists and parliamentary investigators are hot on the trail of a how pre-Iraq war Italian forged documents were delivered to the White House, alleging that Saddam Hussein had obtained yellowcake uranium ore from Niger. It reads that new links implicating Italian companies and individuals with then Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi now raise the question of whether Berlusconi received a payback as part of the deal, namely a Pentagon contract to build the US President's special fleet of helicopters. The yellowcake story in the United States has long been linked to the ongoing investigation into the outing of CIA agent Valerie Plame. And Plame's diplomat husband, Joe Wilson, had probed the Niger connection and concluded that the Bush administration was twisting intelligence reports to fit its case for war. The article goes on to say that in late September last year, CIA Director George Tenet and Secretary of State Colin Powell cited the attempted yellowcake purchase from Niger in separate classified hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. In advance of President Bush's January 2003 State of the Union address, Hadley asked for the CIA's approval to include the Niger claim in the President's speech, even though the CIA had explicitly excised the claim from a prior address given by the President and now repeated its misgivings to Hadley. Bush ended up saying in his speech that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. Bush attributed this intelligence to the British government. No mention was made of any connections between the Italian and American governments. So there you are, another little bit of possible scandal, and we seem to see no end to these revelations that are coming out. An email that came through just a week ago, and it was headed, "How come politicians all have such leaky memories?" And it was referring to the network's planned stakeout of Fitzgerald court meetings, commenting that there was no formal sign of indictment. Now, I did read that information out last Friday because that was the day that the meeting was taking place with the grand jury. And as far as I can tell from last Saturday, that they have served indictments for perjury and lying over Valerie Plame. But the official announcement was expected this week. Now, so far, I haven't seen anything come up, so we still cannot say for 100% certain that that has gone forward. Now, in a separate email I saw, which came from a Truth Out report, this was Saturday last, by Jason Leopold, mentioned that the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, had spent more than half a day on that Friday at the offices of Patton Box, the law firm representing Karl Rove. During the course of that meeting, Fitzgerald served attorneys for former Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove with an indictment charge regarding the embattled White House official, charging him with perjury and lying to investigators related to his role in the CIA leak case, and instructed one of the attorneys to tell Rove that he had 24 hours to get his affairs in order. And high-level sources with direct knowledge of the meeting said that on Saturday morning. Now, sources said Fitzgerald was in Washington, D.C. on Friday last and met with Luskin for about 15 hours to go over the charges against Rove, which include perjury and lying to investigators about how and when Rove discovered that Valerie Plame, Wilson, was a covert CIA operative and whether he shared that information with reporters. At that time, this was on the Sunday, beg your pardon, it was on the Saturday last, it said it was still unknown on that day whether Fitzgerald charged Rowe with a more serious obstruction of justice charge. And sources close to the case said Friday that it appeared very likely that an obstruction charge against Rowe would be included with charges of perjury and lying to investigators. Now, the 9/11 incident obviously will not go away for a long time, and there was an email with an extract from the Capital Times, which apparently comes from a website called Madison.com, an article by Kevin Barrett, and he was saying that on an earlier Saturday, which I think was a week last Saturday, former Bush administration official Morgan Reynolds drew an enthusiastic capacity crowd at the Wisconsin Historical Society Auditorium. And they said it was probably the first time in the Historical Society history that it had drawn a full house on a Saturday afternoon at the beginning of the final exams. Now, Reynolds, the former director of the Criminal Justice Center at the National Center for Policy Analysis, economist for George W. Bush's Labor Department, charged the Bush administration with gross maladministration, proposed the prosecution of top administration officials. And it was said that despite the prestigious speaker and venue and the gravity of charges there, for most Americans, they believe that the event never happened. Why? Because it was censored, subject to a total media blackout, and not a word in the state journal, not a word in the Capital Times, not a word in the local TV news, and not a word on the local radio news. And of course, not a word in the national media. So he's saying, why the blackout? Because Reynolds violated the ultimate US media taboo. He charges the Bush administration with orchestrating the 9/11 attacks as a pretext for launching a pre-planned long war in the Middle East over our civil liberties and massively increasing military spending. So there you are. No big deal there, but the facts about 9/11 just keep coming back. I've noticed one or two new videos that are still appearing on the internet. So if you're interested, there's no shortage of information. Now, I'm now moving on to a section that I call my UFO section. And this week in the UK, a 400-page document was released by the Ministry of Defence under the Freedom of Information Act. Now, this was yet another, shall we say, cover-up that tended to try and prove that UFOs had no basis as intelligent craft, or the possibility that they came from off Earth. And they dwelt, as usual, on the floating gas clouds, Venus, and the usual excuses to try and explain away the thousands upon thousands of UFO reports. Now, an article appeared the following Monday after release of this information, and it was authored by Nick Pope. And if you haven't heard of Nick Pope, he was with the Ministry of Defence UFO project from 1991 to 1994. He's still with the ministry now, but he's moved his position. And obviously he's very well equipped to comment on this release of what was otherwise top secret classified information. Now, he has proven from previous talks and books he's written that he is quite an open character. So one can be fairly confident in the reliability of what he said. And I will quote from the article that appeared in our press. And it is saying of Nick Pope that as someone who has worked in the UFO field for a number of years and seen at first hand the detailed reports of many sightings over this country, I can say the research being published today does anything but conclude that most UFO sightings can be explained away by such natural phenomena. On the contrary, while providing a wealth of fascinating detail on a subject previously shrouded in mystery, Project Condyne, as it was codenamed, leaves at least as many unanswered questions as not. The result was the most splendidly named committee in the history of the civil service, the Flying Saucer Working Party. And he was talking there about when the Ministry of Defence first became involved in the UFO phenomenon in 1950, when this particular study group was set up. So he goes on to say, its conclusions set out in the classified report from 1951 were sceptical, saying UFO sightings were hoaxes or delusions, and consequently it recommended no further investigations be carried out. So there we have yet another false impression given that they had no further interest in it, when we all know that behind the scenes they were extremely interested in what was taking place. Now, the article says a little later that the MOD and the RAF were forced to think again, and the sceptical conclusions of the Flying Saucer Working Party were overturned. UFO sightings were to be reported and investigated but could not be discussed with the media or the public. Guidance was set out in the 1956 document Classified Secret. In 1965, in the course of liaison with the Americans, the MOD confirmed UFO sightings were investigated by, quote, our Air Force Technical Intelligence Department, unquote. And in a statement that had led to accusations of cover-ups, the document went on, our policy is to play down the subject of UFOs and to avoid attaching undue publicity to it. So there you have it, from their own mouths, exactly what they were up to. Now the article goes on to say, and this is Nick Pope still talking here about the various projects and what was happening. He said, after 4 years and 460 pages of analysis, have we solved the UFO mystery? And he says, well, no, we haven't. That UAP exists is indisputable. And UAP was a term the MOD decided to use as opposed to UFO because they thought that was a bit demoted. And that meant unidentified aerial phenomena. And for some reason that seemed to go down better amongst the people in the Ministry of Defence. So he's going on to say that UAP exists is indisputable. And the executive summary stated, before going on to say that no evidence had been found to suggest they are hostile or under any type of control, that what we have is a comprehensive drawing together of existing research coupled with some new theories, but the report has not provided a definitive explanation of the phenomenon. Although the study cannot offer the certainty of explanation of all UAP phenomena. So it said that, leaving the door open. Now the article was quite long, but I think that's really the important aspects of it. And this release, under the code name of Project Condyne, apparently should already be posted, and if anyone listening is interested enough to go and read that, you want to look for www.mod.uk. It's as simple as that, and you'll find the full report there. Now I've got one or two other UFO items here. Just sorting out which ones to read first. I'll read the more recent one, although that goes back straight enough to the 1960s. And it's what I do occasionally, by finding some information that is in some of the older flying saucer reviews. excellent magazine in its time. I feel perhaps today it's not quite what it used to be, but then perhaps that's because the existence of UFOs isn't quite the mystery it used to be, so maybe when we're used to reading it, we can't be too surprised anymore by the reports we read. In the 1960s, they included an article in their magazine trying to link a few sightings together as a result of the reports they received. That's sort of amusing sometimes in their own way, but nevertheless they are witnessed. And the first one I refer to happened in 1965 in Brazil. A 32-year-old bank official and friends were hunting and fishing on an estate, and when night began to fall, one particular person was still fishing, and he suddenly heard in the air above him a noise, he said, like the whining of a fouling refrigerator motor. And when he looked up, he found himself right beneath the flat undercarriage of a hovering saucer, and he said it was some 150 feet or so above his head. And the whine increased, and the saucer descended another 15 feet or so, and then rose again to more or less the same height as before. Then once again, it dropped the same distance and then hung there for about 20 seconds or so. And he said, then the noise increased sharply and the craft shot away upwards at an angle of 30 or 35 degrees at such tremendous speed that the witness estimated it was already totally out of sight after it had travelled the first 20 or 30 feet. Now, all of this had taken place about 150 feet from one of the witness's companions. So he went along and spoke to him, and he hadn't actually seen it. But in describing to his colleagues what he had saw, he said the saucer was oval in shape, but not quite round, and the undercarriage, virtually the only part visible, was a flat plate divided by four bars that reminded him of skates. In keeping with the oval shape, two of these bars were longer than the others, and there was an outer border which he described as donut shaped, or like an oval ring, and he estimated its diameter at about 6 foot. Its colour was that of iron, and on one side he was able to catch a glimpse of the saucer's superstructure and saw what looked like a window or windows. And in the centre of the flat undercarriage there was a dark oval something which stood out from the flat plate and appeared to have some kind of indirect illumination, as he could not see it clearly. The writer of this report went on to then talk of another one that happened in the north of France, witnessed by a policeman. And he came running to one of his colleagues to tell them that he had seen this saucer and the little men whom he had just seen on the railway line beside his house. And he was telling his colleague in what was clearly a very frightened condition, and it appears that he saw these beings, which some other people named the Goblin's Cave. Now, there isn't much in the way of description there, but in another case, which we go back to Brazil for, it concerned three businessmen who were crocodile hunting. And in the early hours of one morning, two of them were out in their boat with their flashlights looking for crocodiles. And they saw what they called little blue men. Now, they estimate that these little men, which were 3 foot tall, with another 2 foot, which they said was accounted for by some sort of hat or helmet that they wore, best described as a tall brimless bowler with a rounded top, and they said the blue colour turned out to be a dim greyish blue glow, tending to obscure their outline in detail. But they could, however, discern a line, which was either a fringe of hair or the lower edge of the hat, two round eyes, a small seemingly flat triangle in the place where Mao is, and a one-piece vestment extending down to a broad black belt carrying a black box at the front, about 6 inches square. And the arms appeared short and were held straight down close to the sides at all times. And the legs and feet were indistinct. And they were talking about them having, appearing to have some sort of beard which extended from the vicinity of the mouth downwards to divide and run to both sides of the chest. Although agreeing that it could have been breathing apparatus, they could not see clear enough to be certain, and this thought did not occur to them. So there we are, just sort of some interesting ones in passing there. Now, there's a file called earthfiles.com, which is run by Linda Moulton Howe. I think anyone who gets into the UFO side will be aware of the good work she does. And you can subscribe to earthfiles.com and get regular articles sent out, which she puts together very well. They're very authentic and backed up with a lot of official, if you like, information. And she refers to one of this year, January the 20th, 2006. And she says, some startling facts that are emerging from research about the V2 rocket history at White Sands Proving Ground show that in the 1940s, the New Mexico and Texas newspaper headlines spoke about peculiar phenomena that were interfering with those early rocket launches. And they caused the rockets to veer off course. And she refers to photographs showing the peculiar phenomena were circular discs that instantly appeared next to the V2s right before the rockets went off and crashed them to the ground. So I beg your pardon, I'm just talking about, I think, the date when the article was issued, not the date when these UFOs were seen. So we're going back to 1947. She says on that was not known to those 1947 reporters. And she said they also did not know that the Truman administration had secretly ordered the American military to shoot down the disc technology. And said that United States pilots tried shooting down many of the discs, but there was retaliation. And this retaliation included, allegedly, plane crashes and reports of beams that can capture a plane and the pilot in mid-air and cause them to vanish. According to off-the-record testimonies and leaked documents, such mid-air captures were even watched on radar. I have to say, I think that if something disappears in mid-air in those circumstances, one would find in reality that, that these are beamed up into their large ships. And no harm actually comes to the pilot. Moving on through her report, which she issued, which on this occasion was 12 pages long, she's talking here about the word that came back on an attack on a UFO, and she said, the word that came back was to roll in, and basically that means attack the object, which, and it also meant that the object was now being followed by the Hornet, which was equipped with an AIM-9 Sidewinder missile, and the Hornet fighter plane was firing all of his missiles, however many that might have been. And she said, I presume they were early versions of the Sidewinder missile, which was a heat-seeking missile. And she said there would be some period of time in which the missiles were travelling, and a pilot who was making a particular report said that the missiles had all exploded before they hit the unidentified aerial object. And he said then that the UFO turned on a blue beam and it was rotating, and the beam was starting to move towards him. I think the point being there that they must have had some sort of magnetic shield or protection around them, which deflected or exploded the missiles before they could hit the object. He said at that point, this is the pilot talking, he went into a dive, and he was impressed by the voice of the pilot. This is the person listening to the recording, because it suddenly went up into this high falsetto, an indication of controlled fear. And the pilot was turning and trying to go away from the object. And on the radarscope, they could see spots getting closer to one another. Then they merged, and there was just one dot on the radar, and the radar people didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, that dot disappeared. And they said that for the next 48 hours, they were giving weather forecasts as to what they could find while they were doing the search. But the searches never found anything, no wreckage, no nothing. So that's not a complete report, but it tells you some of the things that have happened that you wouldn't otherwise learn about. The person reporting on this said that they and others were never officially told that it never happened. They knew the plane was lost, but for some other reason. He asked if the event was classified, and he was told no, because it did not happen. And you cannot classify something that didn't happen. So that's sort of how they got away with it. There is no supporting information, only the people who were there at the time, and they are not going to talk. So the person involved here was invited, along with some other guys, to go and see the facility. And he went there, and he described how the various men had various rankings and degrees. And while this group was there, they noticed there was another small group of guys from the Navy. And he said, they were saying, you think that the Air Force guys have a lot of degrees. There are guys in the Navy who have several doctorates. And somebody asked, well, why do they need all that? And he said, all those degrees to do whatever it is they are doing. And according to the reporter here, the reason was because they were working on aliens. And their degrees showed that they were doctors, and they had had quite high qualifications. There was a Lieutenant Colonel Hitler, whose name was mentioned in the report, who told about a number of facilities in the Albuquerque area and Kirkland AFB, where he reckoned research was done on aliens. And he said some pretty strange things, like he said the tramway, whatever that's called. And the editor made a note here, it's called the Sandia Tramway. Anyway, Hitler said three times, I'm now a member of the real Project Blue Book. I'm now a member of the real Project Blue Book. And he said he did not know what the Blue Book was, but he remembers Hitler referring to it three times and saying it was the real one. There we are. A little bit garbled because I'm taking extracts from a much longer report, but it hits upon some interesting things there. Now, I'm coming to the last section of the program, and that is to cover what I call general messages, messages of light, and there's been some very good ones this week, so I'll pick out what I think are the most potent parts of the messages. Was in fact one I received today. I'm always a bit puzzled over how to pronounce this name. I call it Tickley, but it's Tickley, I guess, T-I-K-E-L-E. And she circulates an email with excellent messages. And this one was called Flying Free, and it came through her yesterday. Now, it talks of their being such a great abundance of assistance available to us now from the unseen forces of light, and confirms so it is, and says, never has there been the gift of so much love available to you on earth while incarnate. So what do you do to access it, to bring it fully into your journey, to have your heart sing the joy in all that you do? It takes willingness to move into the new earth energy now, in your way of being in the world. It takes most of all the willingness to open the connection with your own higher self presence, and to allow for and to strengthen the connection that you have with all that is, the creator light, by whatever name you choose to receive this energy. Message goes on to say that as you choose to focus on seeking the love in everything, your field becomes more brilliant, and your life force, your vitality, higher and stronger, more evident to those around you. You fly free of the matrix energy, those old patterns of thought that don't serve you, having become cages rather than the protection they were intended to be by the part of you that created them. Your patterns of emotional response also lose their grip on you, and in fact feel rather ridiculous as they are no longer needed either, and you find yourself laughing instead of feeling sad or angry in response to something around you. The process of shifting your way of being to bring forth this freedom in your life is what is being asked for now by your higher self, by the creator light, that you might come to understand yourself as living in a world that is based in love, where there is peace everywhere, and all can live and prosper according to what they find the most loving service to offer to the whole, that expresses their unique gifts and talents. That was about a 3-page message, and I've extracted, I thought, some very interesting statements there. And I have to say, when the channel spoke of sometimes finding yourself laughing at some of the situations you face, that is also my own experience. Because when you can be centered and detached from what is taking place, you can sometimes see how silly some of the reactions are that people have. And I must indeed say, I've been caught laughing at some of the things my wife has said. And when I laugh, of course, she thinks I'm laughing at her, and it's rather difficult to explain I'm not, because I'm just laughing at the situation. Anyway, to carry on, because there's not too many minutes left. Also today, I received one, again, excellent source of channeling, Celia Fenn, who channels, I think amongst others, Archangel Michael. And this was the message for May, and there were two messages, in fact, and the first one was talking about earth keepers and ocean keepers creating the paradise earth. And we're talking about how the dolphins and the whales were leaving the oceans and said that they are handing over to us the responsibility for tending the oceans and ensuring that the oceanic grids are kept in a healthy condition in the new earth. And goes on to say, it is also up to you to ensure that you can offer them a pristine environment and a friendly and supportive welcome. And that is with reference to some occasion in the future when we may invite them back. And it goes on to say that, yes, this sounds difficult, but it can be achieved if sufficient light workers begin to take responsibility for this work. In the past, you have been disempowered by the belief that you cannot do anything to halt the degradation of the planet, but we say indeed you can. As you join forces with nature spirits and elementals, you will find that you do indeed have the power to recreate a pristine paradise environment on this planet. And also that you are ready to become the stewards and guardians of your earth. And finally, I make another little extract here saying, is this not a wonderful way to serve the earth? Many of the young indigo beings who are now entering adult life will be called to serve in this way. They will release their frustrations and angers and will become the rainbow warriors that they were meant to be. It will bring much joy to them to learn the wisdom and the wilderness from the wise elders of the human race. A lot of answers, I think, in these little extracts to the sort of things that go through people's minds, the sort of questions I sometimes get asked in the emails that reach me. Now, I also had yesterday a copy of a message channeled by Doug Kelly on June 5th, 2004, a message from Kutumi. He's talking about, let me see, I've got to pick up the threads here. Yes, he's talking about our destiny and that our galactic brothers and sisters are gathered here not only to witness but to assist our race of beings as they experience the transition through a third dimensional level of reality, now for many the fourth dimension, and soon to be the fifth dimensional vibration of love and light. And he's saying that your divine spark and conscious connection to the source of all wisdom and beauty and truth that surrounds you, that is indeed the truth of who you are. The light shall set you free from the worries and cares of the day as your path is cleared before you. No need to take the machete and hack a trail through the jungle to your chosen destination. As you align yourself each waking morning to the light of your Christ within, your life will unfold. The path will open before you as you move with grace and ease through the final days of the tribulations. This is what your soul prepared you for. This is the destiny of your soul, your highest aspect of who you are. And just what is the destiny of which I speak? It is truly the destiny of all beings who grace this beloved planet and this ocean of planet of blue floating in the outer reaches of a spiraling galaxy. It is the destiny of all to experience the most profound transformation in consciousness. And he goes on to talk about how the planet chose a long time ago, at the start of the cycle that began 26,000 years ago around the great central sun, talking about how even the smallest particle or component of the atom is not a particle at all, but a wave packet of energy, a wave packet of light. Yes, I have heard that description used before. And he goes on to say, let's change our definition of what all is composed of to the potential to manifest. The universe within all living things is at the most fundamental essence of reality, the ultimate reality, the pure potential to manifest, to create the heart's desire. And then the question always comes back to what the heart desires, for in order to manifest out of the limitless sea of potential, there first must be the thought, the first cause, the desire to move in a certain direction. For one cannot arise from bed each morning without the desire to move the covers back and lift the body from the night's sleep. So what do we desire? This is not entirely an individual decision to be made, for are we not all parts or fragments of a unified whole, while always remembering that each fragment in a holistic universe contains and truly is the whole. So what does the universe desire? What does your mother, the Earth, desire? Your Earth, the beloved Terra, desires to come back into balance, to rid itself of the abuses it has long suffered at the hands of its human occupants. Yes, it is time to bring the Earth and the affairs of men back into balance. And how can this be accomplished is our next question. Well, all can be accomplished by raising the vibration of the swirling packets of light photons of which all is made manifest out of infinite potential. You start with the essential essence of all that is by increasing the rate of movement, and all must follow. A higher vibrational rate will cause all lower vibrations to resonate to the higher. This is universal law, the law of resonance, the law of vibration. And he goes on to say that this process that all will be going through also includes the so-called dark forces. So I think in those extracts I've taken, there really is a lot of interesting information. To me, it does answer a lot of the questions when people wonder what the meaning is contained within the messages. And as I mentioned a bit earlier in my program, I was tempted to say, strange enough, similar things came up in my own messages. But there may be, when you think the spiritual hierarchy is helping us from many, many sources to become enlightened, you would expect there to be that type of confirmation. Well, that's it. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope to be with you next Friday, as usual. Thank you for being with me. God bless you all. Goodbye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.